Cassandra, are you in the room?
I am.
Wonderful. What do you say we start with the door prize? Yep. Let's get a winner. Right here. Cassandra, you're making your way. Take your time. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to what has become an annual and regular part of FCB's convention. It's my pleasure to welcome here this afternoon Robert Doyle, who's the director, current director of the Division of Blind Services. Robert impressed me most when I first met him, I think it was last year, when he told me he fathered nine children. And he's quite the family man, but he still makes time to see that his agency can fully meet the needs of FCB. Of blind people, blind and visually impaired patrons. Are you ready, Cassandra? All right, I got to talk for 2 minutes. So we're going to get an update on the status of things at DBS, and I think Robert will answer some questions. And I ask everybody to be true ladies and gentlemen. We have two mics that we will walk around so that we can make sure everyone hears everything they need to hear. And let me just give the mic to our hotel convention coordinator here for 1 second. He has an announcement.
Good afternoon, everyone. How's it going? For those of you, I'm sure most of the people in this room know Lisa Kretschmer from Florida Reading. Unfortunately, a Victor Reader stream has gone missing from her table. And, you know, things happen, folks. And all I would like is if anybody happens to find it wherever they find it, please feel free to contact me or Lisa, no questions asked. Lisa has been a longtime supporter and friend to the Florida Council of the Blind as well as the blindness community. And, you know, I'm here talking to you, so if you could make it happen, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Like Mikey says, no questions asked, but Lisa has been a tremendous friend to the FCB, donated many technology items for our auctions and our raffles and so on and so forth. And I hope somebody will be able to return this to her. Are the doors closed in the back?
They are. They are now.
Okay. All right. Cassandra?
Yes, sir.
Here you go.
Jim, can I make an announcement after Sandra, too?
Sure, Mike.
Thank you.
Okay, so you guys, Clay's been really good. They've given us so much stuff. So we have another $25 gift certificate for Outback. So please have your tickets. Oh, is that what it is? Okay. So the first number I'm going to call is 144.
That's not my number.
Well, I'm sorry. How about 117? Well, then it can't be yours then. Uh-oh. Let's see. Let's try 108. Okay, I'm going to call one more. How about, I like this. How about, let's see. She told me to do it this way. How about 110?
Oh, no. That's two by one number. One more?
One more. All right. How about 170?
Oh, we got a winner.
All right, can you bring it so I can check it, please? Oh, we have a winner.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Can I do another one?
No.
Okay. All right, at this point, I'm going to sit down and turn the microphone over to Mike Ulrich.
On the bottom.
Oh, thank you.
It's on the bottom. The very bottom.
I can't find this one.
It's a three-way. No. All right, project, Mike.
All right, let me do this the old-fashioned way. I just want to remind you all, and all the chapters who have tickets, I got my buddy L.J. Altman. He's sitting right by the registration table at the hallway behind the elevators. Turn those tickets in.
Until when, Mike?
We're going to be there set up till 4 p.m., all right? So it's imperative you get there, all right?
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate your hard work and dedication. All right. We will now hear from the director of DBS. Thank you.
Good afternoon, FCB.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. It is good to be with you all again this year. I want to thank President Cratch and the members of the board for inviting me here again to speak to you all and just really give me another opportunity to come out and to mingle. That's one of the things I really enjoy about having a chance to go over to the consumer organizations and some of the meetings is to get around and connect with the people that we work with, people that we serve as part of the division, and just kind of see how things are going. It's good the second time around to be able to recognize some folks that you talked to last year and to get some updates of what's happening with folks, both personally as well as how people are progressing with their goals. It has been a very, very busy year for us at the Division of Blind Services. And just a whole lot going on in a lot of areas. And I do have some remarks that I can share, some of which we introduced at our Florida Rehab Council and the Blind meeting last week. And I want to recognize we do have a couple members of the FRCB here, both Mikey, who you all know, who's been very involved and integrated with organizing, Rebecca, Reverend Brooks, just other folks that are here with the FRCB, but we want to recognize them for being here and just for the work that they do in terms of serving on that council. And so I do have some remarks. They've heard some of these last week. I can do some updates there. But I also would like to be in a position not to take so much time with scripted information and be able to really kind of just chat with you all and kind of find out what kind of questions you all have, what kind of comments that you have, and what kind of things that we can take back to the state office and we can take back to the folks in across the state to see how we can improve on services. So why don't I take a few minutes and give some of those scripted remarks, and then I'll come off script and see what kind of questions that you all have. So as I was talking with the folks with the Rehab Council on the Blind last week, we have been very busy. And sometimes when you're in the midst of all of your busyness, it's hard to look back and see what you've really accomplished. And in preparation for the meeting, I just kind of made a list of things that we have been working on in the last quarter and the first part of the year. And I think when I talked to Lee Nasahi this morning from Lighthouse of Central Florida, I think we both agreed that the intensity of this year has been probably more intense than many, many years of our careers. We have been working on our contracts, and I'm really, really pleased as that one of the things that I said that brought me here to Florida was some contracting issues. And that really kind of dominated a lot of the discussions, probably the first 12 to 18 months of my tenure here, contracts and relations and making sure that everything is working in the right proportions. But I'm really glad to say that that's not dominating conversations anymore. We are really in a position now that we are, I think, working. We have some good relationships with the community rehab programs, providers. We've interjected in those contracts some levels of accountability that was necessary as a result of some of the things that had been talked about on the state level and blown up in the news. But we're back to serving folks, and really that's what it's all about. We need to be serving the people that we're called to serve. But this cycle, we've completed the rehab engineering contract. We have a statewide provider once again, which is Tampa Lighthouse. We're glad to have that behind us. We are working on the blind babies contract that will be renewed for July 1, as well as the adult program and as well as the older blind program. And we are also working on and having some conversations with folks in the national headquarters of NFB about renewing the Newsline contract as well. And so we have strengthened those contracts in many ways, and as I mentioned, tried to ensure accountability. But also, when we talk about accountability, we've really tried to have a focus of the consumer first. And so you know, some simple language that we put in the contract, but just very profound, and it's really had a way to impact the folks that are providing direct services to providers, is that we've said in the contracts is that services need to be provided in a manner, a schedule, and a pace, and in a location that's best suited to meet the needs of the consumers. And again, it sounds very simple, but what it means is that, you know, in some areas, folks are going into programs that are very regimented. And if you don't start, I heard somebody say at one point, you know, if I don't start this week, then I may not be able to get services for 3 or 4 weeks because of that cycle. And what we've said to the contractors, and we say the same thing to our staff, is that services need to be provided in a manner and a pace and a schedule best suited to meet the needs of the consumers. And that services need to be made available to consumers at least once a week. And that there need to be staff on board in the contractors or at the provider locations that can provide those services. And so what that means is that if an agency is providing O&M services, which is a central or very critical aspect of services, that there can't be a part-time employee providing O&M services to the provider once every 3 weeks. There needs to be somebody available to provide those services at least once a week through that provider so that there's a continuity of services so that folks aren't signing up for services and then, you know, you go in and you get your O&M and then because of schedules, you're not able to get your O&M for 3 or 4 weeks later or maybe 5 weeks later. And then as a result of that, you've forgotten what you learned. And so now we know for some folks once a week and it's not going to be, you know, good for the consumer, for the client because of other things that are going on. And so where there are situations or issues that interfere with that happening, certainly we have made provisions for that in the contract. So we've worked on that. We've been working on, we've developed a schedule to go out and monitor the providers where we're on site. We'll be on site with half of the providers this year going into those locations and actually evaluating and looking at direct instruction, looking at the books and making sure that things are happening that way. We've also developed a schedule where we're going out and monitoring our own staff at DBS. We've been working on a data reporting plan. And really, you know, the data really tells what's happening. And so we have been working on a very robust system that we can look at and see what's happening in each of the districts on a daily basis, on a weekly basis, on a monthly basis. We've been working on how we provide services through the rehab center. We have been looking at the data, and we've saw some positive things in the data, and we had some things that had us scratching our heads a little bit, like, you know, how's that happening and why is that happening? We've been working on improving and outcomes for employment. We're very pleased to say that we are on track to meet or beat what we did last year in terms of employment outcomes. We've been working with others in terms of collaborating with what we call the Employment First Work Group on the state level. We've been working on some commercials for the agency so that we can highlight the we got some new ones that we're working on, and we're looking to get them out and online, and hopefully maybe television at some point. We're working on some Facebook advertising where in areas where we know that there are clients, but maybe there's a lack of client referrals. Folks will be able to see on Facebook, and you know, is vision impacting your work, your life, et cetera, and being able to click on those things and connect with our agency. We've been working on expanding business enterprise opportunities. And really, really interested in trying to make sure that we're able to recruit a new class of folks for BBE. And we are have challenged our bureau chief of the Business Enterprise Program to go out and recruit some younger folks into the program and make sure that we continue to support those who are already in the program. We have worked on and are working on renewing a new grant application for folks to apply to the division to receive funds for programs that are new programs. And we did that last year where we put out $75,000. This year we're hoping to, in the next few weeks, to put out new grant applications totaling over $200,000 for not-for-profit organizations to apply for, so that we can do some new and innovative things, or we can provide support in areas that we have not been able to or that we have not been able to in the past. We are working with and very grateful for some of your very own, some of the members of FCB and members who are on our direct service organization, the Blind Services Foundation of Florida, to get more programming for children's programs. And as we talked with the resolutions committee the other day, that as a result of a number of the resolutions that came out from FCB and us talking with consumers, we are very actively working with work groups to try to bring some children's camp activities next year. And also as a result of FCB's resolutions and advocacy, the Florida Association of Agencies Serving the Blind has been working with the legislature to try to fund a children's program to provide additional supports for children from ages 6 to 13. And that did gain some traction in the legislative section this year, and I'll talk about the legislative part next. But more advocacy will need to take place in order to see those things come to fruition. We've been working on a memorandum of understanding with the Division of Vocational Rehab to make sure that individuals who have multiple disabilities aren't passed from one agency to the other, meaning if they have blindness and something else, that they're not just passed from one location or one agency to the other where they're not getting services. We've been working to strengthen language to make sure that if you come to DBS or if you go to DBR, that you will be served. And if there are things that can be provided for out of one agency, that we will make sure that that's able to happen. It's very important. DBR, as you all know, had been on an order of selection where they weren't able to serve a certain group of individuals. And so there are areas that DBS can step up and provide support. And so we've been trying to put that into language, and we're working on several drafts of that to get that finished. Obviously, we've been working on staffing. We've had some staffing challenges, vacancies. People have been promoted. I'm very, very pleased to promote folks within the agency. Some people have found new opportunities in terms of promotional opportunities outside of the agency. There's been some folks we looked at last year and we say, you know what, maybe it's a good idea that we help you find a place to work that's outside of DBS. And so that's created some vacancies. And as a result of that, it's put a little strain on some of the folks that are working in the agency, because many people have been working 2 and 3 jobs. But we have been very focused on recruiting the best folks and putting the right people in the right locations, because if you have people who are the right people in the right locations, then that means that you have better client services. And so we've been working on staffing. We've done some new hires. We've created a new statewide transition position, which will help oversee transition services. And Brian Michaels, who was the district administrator over in Orlando, has taken that position. And Brian is a very gifted, very intelligent young man, and we're just expecting our transition program to see new heights as a result of that. And so we created that statewide position. We have our DA in Jacksonville, who is now a VR supervisor at the rehab center, working under the bureau chief, Ed Hudson. He reports to Ed Hudson there. And so we're looking at more programming at the rehab center. Want to make sure that we're filling every bed and that everybody there is receiving good quality services out of that rehab center. And so we've been working on programming there. As you all know, many of you all know, I know we have, I think they told me, at least five friends of the library here today. We have a vacancy, have had a vacancy at the library in terms of our bureau chief for, well, I don't know, maybe 8-9 months now. And we have hired, and it's official now, we have officially hired Jim Woolihan to be our chief of library services there in Daytona. And Jim is very well-regarded in the community. He's very well-regarded across the state. But not only do we have Jim to provide the overall leadership to the library, but we also hired a librarian to provide the library technical support that's necessary at that location. And so Ms. Rebecca Ayers will be joining the team there at the library. I don't have her full credentials here in front of me, but I can tell you that Rebecca is a librarian. I can tell you that she's worked in many areas. She has been a fix-it person. She's gone into organizations where they've had issues and challenges, and she's identified strategies to help press those organizations into greater positions. And we were a little concerned because Rebecca was our second choice for bureau chief. And we were a little concerned, and we discussed this with her during the interview process, that she's gone into locations, she's fixed them, and then she's moved on. And our concern about moving her in as a bureau chief initially was that we didn't want her to come in and fix and go. We were looking for some longevity. But we think that Jim having the longevity and Ms. Ayers, who has told us that she is not just looking to come in for a short period of time, is there to help us to make it a better library so that we're in a position to provide the materials that we need to increase our readership, to increase the volunteer services that are happening there at the library, to go back and look at the prison programs, and as Paul Edwards mentioned to us the other day, to make sure that we're not denying access to readership or denying access to materials by the way that we've done the BARD program over the last couple of years. And so there will be some discussions amongst the team about how we can make sure that those books are available and those materials are available that have been only exclusively available through BARD, how we may be able to make those available through a cassette program. And so I've talked to Paul about that. We'll talk to Jim about that and look for other ways to do that. And so, again, we're looking, you know, on that Daytona campus, it's the only one like it in these United States and probably in the world. It really is. And we have high hopes and high expectations of the folks that are working there. There are folks that are moving out and moving over. And, you know, as, if you know, over the last 18, 20 months, we've made some changes in the dorm there at the library. There were some challenges there. We made some changes in the, not in the library, in the rehab center. We made some changes in the library itself. We made some changes in the structure of the organizational charts. And we've looked at how we can improve data reporting systems. And we have some strategies moving forward there. You know, it's not an overnight process. You know, we were reminded of the story of the tortoise and the hare, you know, and those of you all who know me know that I am a man of faith. There's a scripture that said the race is not given to the swift nor the strong. It's those who endure. And so we're looking at processes. We're looking at putting people in place that can help us to excel and help us to achieve on the long run. I'm not looking for quick fixes. I'm looking for sustainable fixes. And again, that means the right people who have the right attitudes and people who believe in people who are blind and people who believe that folks who are blind and visually impaired can achieve success. And so I think we're putting those people in places, and we're building our teams. And again, it's caused some vacancies, and it's caused some long-term vacancies in some instances, because we have advertised positions, and we looked at the list and we said, no, we're going to throw that list out and we're going to advertise it again. And there's been some positions that we've advertised 3 and 4 times because we want to make sure we get the right folks. And so we are very pleased in Miami. We have a new DA over there, Juan Carlos Diaz, and we're really excited about the work he's doing there. We've promoted Denise, I don't want to mess up her last name, as supervisor there. Say it again. Yeah, Denise V. We promoted Denise Vieca, thank you, to provide services there. We brought back Jeff Whitehead to serve in our Orlando office, and so we're really pleased to have Jeff back. He knows blindness. He's been working in this field. He was our DA, I think, in Tampa, provided other programs. So we're really excited about that, and we're just working on hiring a new DA in Jacksonville. We do have other vacancies, and so I do want to encourage. I had somebody that approached me at the NFB meeting and said, do you hire blind people? And we certainly do hire blind people. And there's been several folks who have approached me who sent me their resumes at the NFB meeting that we've been trying to tie into vacancies that we have in the areas of the state that they work in. We've hired blind folks and visually impaired folks in the Tallahassee office and both the Tallahassee district office as well as in the state office. And so we really are and are looking for folks who want to work, who have drive, who have determination, who folks who believe in the vision, folks who know how to get in line with the vision that we're working and help us to achieve what we're trying to achieve as an agency. We've been working as an agency on our strategic plan, and later on this summer we're looking to have some statewide calls similar to what we did a year or so ago with the with our VR state plan, but we've been working on a strategic plan to get your input about what are those top three, those top four goals as an agency. Do we want to look at the mission statement and revise the mission statement to be more encompassing of what we're looking at and also aligning in, you know, the whole line of the Department of Education where we're housed? And so we will be having some statewide calls there. We have been working on expanding supported employment opportunities across the state. And what is supported employment? Supported employment is vocational rehab services to individuals who have severe multiple disabilities. In the past, there's been three or four contractors in the state, and only those three or four contractors provided services in those areas that where they were for supported employment. And we've just made available dollars across the state so that people who are blind and have other severe multiple disabilities are able to receive those services. And we've reached out, and we obviously want to work with the CRPs who have a specialization in blindness first to provide those services. But where those CRPs don't have an interest or don't have the staffing to do that, then we're making connections with other not-for-profit organizations who provide supported employment services to provide those services. But what we said to those community rehab providers that said, hey, I don't want to, or I'm interested in providing support employment, we've said, and because you have a contract with us for VR services, where you're not willing or where you're not able to do support employment, we expect that you're going to provide the blindness-specific support to the clients when they go into a job, and maybe provide some of the supports to the employer. We're not asking them to give their trade secret, so to speak, to those other not-for-profits, but we want to make sure that the blindness-specific skills are there and that connection is made. We've been doing a lot of training. We're introducing a new program. It's called the Vermont Model of Employment. It's also actually called the Vermont Progressive Employment Model in six of our districts and their satellite offices for people who have just had a hard time getting a job. People who have never been job ready, but they want to go to work, but maybe they have very low job work experiences. Maybe they have been on multiple locations and just really have not been successful. Maybe they have criminal histories, and that's prevented their ability to go to work. And so we're working on a progressive employment model that we've just kicked off last week, and we're looking at in the district offices. And if it's proved successful, as it has in some other areas, we're looking to make it statewide where we're able to help those individuals who had difficulty working, or maybe they've been out of work for a long time in order to get a job. Couple other real big things that I want to talk about, and then I'm going to open up for discussion or questions that you all have had, that you all have, is the legislative session and the budget, and then also WEOA. We have just concluded on May 1st the legislative session. There are three bills that passed the legislative session that directly impact DBS. There's others that have some other connections or impacts to what we do as an agency. But those three that directly impact us is House Bill 71, which is a bill dealing with service animals, redefining in some instances people with disabilities that can use service animals. It also expands the requirements that public accommodations have to change their procedures, change their practices in order to accommodate individuals with disabilities. It defines a service animal as either a dog or a miniature horse, which is in the federal law right now. But it also says that those animals, if you tell a public accommodation that you have to change the way you do business to make sure that you're accepting individuals who have service animals, it says that they can't ask those individuals what disability they're there to help, but they can ask if they're there to provide a support to a person with disability. But it also says that if those animals come into the location and they're not under the direct control of their handler, if they're not under their control, or if they're not housebroken, or if there are other things, or posing a threat, and the individual that's handling the service animal does not take direct action to bring that animal under control, that facility can remove that animal from the facility, or have that animal removed from the facility. And so that's one of the things that passed in that law. There's another bill that passed, what's called the ABLE Act in Florida, which is a great act that allows, similar to a college savings plan, it allows individuals who are under 26 to begin and families to begin saving money for disability-related expenses. And it does not – those assets that are accumulated does not impact that person's other benefits. And so you don't have to worry about asset limitations and things that have been a challenge in the past. That passed this year. And the third thing that impacted us is the development of a WIOA task force. WIOA is an acronym. It stands for the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act. And before I get into WIOA, I want to talk a little bit about DBS's budget. We had a governor's recommended budget this year, roughly about $52 million. It sustained the agency of where we were. We asked for some areas to enhance our technology and to allow us to be in compliance with other areas of the law for data storage and data security and backup. That was introduced by the governor. The House picked up a very similar budget and gave us very much what we were asking for in that House budget. The Senate budget took away some things that we asked for or that were in the governor's recommended budget, but it added $2 million for children's programs. Well, the legislative session concluded, and there is no budget. There was no budget passed by the legislature this year. There was a lot of discussions, and none of them really had to do with blind services or many other areas of government, but they had to do with the expansion of medical services, health care, and that caused it. Actually, the session to end a little earlier than what had planned, and there were some other bills relating to people with disabilities that did not pass as a result of the early conclusion of the session. We do know that the House and Senate and the governor are working on a special session. We're told that special session will convene on June 1st, and it's likely to go to June 20th. They will have the opportunity to craft within that special session what they want to deal with. It will be the budget. There may be some other bills that they bring in, maybe some of those other bills that folks were watching in the past that didn't go through but may be picked up. And if not, those things will very, very likely be picked up in the legislative session that will start in January. And so we do have an early legislative session next year. And so we'll start – actually, we're expecting committees to be convening after this special session that goes from June 1st to June 20th that's expected. We're expecting maybe in August or September that committees will begin to start working on and preparing for early session in January. So what's the bottom line? We don't have a budget right now. We're very hopeful that a budget will be picked up and adopted in the special legislative session. Our agency has been asked to look at contingencies. Well, what if? What are important programs? And what will happen if there is no budget by July 1? And what will we do? And so we have put together, and the department has put together, a list of things that say, hey, this is going to happen if there is no budget. And so we're very hopeful that at least those non-controversial things will be picked up. And certainly we are optimistic that those things will be picked up and they will be funded. But stay tuned. That's what I can say. Stay tuned. The last thing I'm going to talk about is the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act. It was a law that was passed by Congress. It was signed into law by the president on July of last year. It made many changes to the way we do employment services. And it calls for the alignment of services between the vocational rehab programs with employment programs, unemployment programs, adult and career education. It calls for an alignment of those programs and services. We have had many meetings in the state, and there was just a task force just recently formed to discuss how we will implement WIOA. There was just recently a set of proposed regulations sent forth by the U.S. Department of Labor and the U.S. Department of Education. I want to say this, and I'm hoping that folks really, really hear me when I say this. We really need for consumers to spend some time taking a look at those regulations because it proposes many broad-scale changes to how we do business. One of the things that it proposes is changes in how we do services in terms of employment outcomes. Takes away the homemaker outcome where we're able to help a family where maybe an individual wanted to stay home and we gave them tools and training and equipment to be able to be very proficient in maintaining and managing their home while a spouse is able to go to work. And that's something that directly impacts agencies for the blind across the nation. Not so much in Florida, but across the nation. And that change in those proposed regulations, if that is adopted, will have an impact on people who are blind across the nation. It makes changes in what an employment outcome is. And so some of the definitions of an employment outcome that we've utilized in the past in a competitive integrated setting, like a call center, the way the definitions are written right now in the proposed regulations would maybe could potentially take away a call center job if the majority of the people in that call center are blind. And we know that that has been a good outcome for folks across the nation where people are making $14, $15, $18 an hour in some call centers. There are many, many other changes in those proposed regulations that can have a dramatic change on how we do business and what employment outcomes are and how we work with other agencies. There are some concerns amongst people across the nation with the National Council of State Agencies Serving the Blind that there could be some pressure on blind agencies to be consolidated into general agencies. And so we really need to pay attention to what's happening. We really need to take some time to make comments on those proposed regulations. There are some things that you all may identify as citizens, as consumers, that we as state agencies are not in a position to talk about or comment on. And so we need folks to really pay attention to those regulations. Those regulations were put out for public comment. The last day to provide public comment is, what's today, the 16th? A month from, I believe, yesterday, June 15th. And so there are five regulations, and we can get those. Actually, I know Paul Edwards and other members of your of the Florida Council of the Blind have that information. They can get that out to you all, and we can get that out to you all as best we can. But there are five separate proposed rulemakings, and each of them can have an impact on how we do business and have an impact on consumers. And so we're asking you all to spend some time, maybe get some groups together and look at them as individuals and provide comments to the U.S. Department of Labor, provide comments to the U.S. Department of Education and the Rehab Services Administration on how those will have a direct impact on you, how those will have an impact on your family, how those will have an impact on your friends and others as a result of what has been proposed. Finally, the Workforce Innovation Opportunity Act Task Force. There's a task force that was created in the state that calls for myself and other directors and other individuals in the state who work with Workforce to get together and to develop recommendations that will be presented to the Career Source Board of Directors. And we're called to look at the workforce delivery system and make recommendations for inclusiveness of various programs, to look at a regional planning design, to look at a one-stop delivery design, to look at the integration of economic development, workforce development, and the state's education system, and also provide recommendations of sector strategies and career pathways. That group has convened, although that bill has not yet been signed by the governor. That bill, at least from the most recent information I have, it had not been signed yet by the governor. That group has convened. We are having public meetings It is housed and chaired by the chairman of Workforce of CareerSource Florida, and we don't know what's going to come out of that group. We have been told that there will not be necessarily any voting taking place by task force members, but that the discussions will lead to the development of a document that will be presented to CareerSource Florida. And so some of us are still not familiar with exactly how that process is going to go, but we encourage you all to pay attention to what's happening in those proceedings. We encourage you all to provide public comment. They have reserved 2 hours of public comment in those sessions, the last 2 hours of each of those meetings, for the public to comment and for you all to, again, to pay attention and give comment from the public standpoint. The next meeting is taking place on June 11th in Tallahassee. It is aired on the Florida Channel. We probably need to talk about how folks are able to provide public comments online and provide public comments by telephone. We'll talk to folks about whether that option is available, but I know that there will be opportunities for people to provide public comments online. So the next meeting is June 11th. It's from 9 to 4 p.m. In Tallahassee. The next one from there is July 16th, and the next one from there is August 6th. And there will likely be a wrap-up webinar that takes place at that time. All right, so that's a conclusion of my scripted comments. I went a little longer than what I wanted to go, but I want to take some questions from you all, maybe about things that I talked about or maybe some things that I didn't talk about, and that we can give an answer about what's happening in the state office. Maybe you've got some ideas. I've told you all that I've learned. I've got many, many great ideas from talking with consumers, and we've made very, very great positive changes both here and in other places that I've worked in Delaware with the blind agency there by listening to the comments and getting feedbacks from our consumers. So anybody have any questions or comments?
I'm going to ask that you guys turn your screen in. So I'm going to get this thing to stand up so I can see you. Then your eye will bring you
up. Oh, that worked. Oh, okay, good. Thank you, my darling. All right. Who's first? Okay. Let me see if I can get to him. No, he's on my side. I just have to come through the tables. All right, Doug.
Thank you, ma'am. Mr. Doyle.
Yes, sir.
Thank you for your comments about the service animal bill. I have a question, though.
Yes, sir.
We've been working on getting that passed, and I've been trying to get a hold of the governor. I got a hold of the governor's office finally Thursday morning to ask what the status was. Senator Altman's office told me that the bill had been passed in both houses and sent to the governor. When I called the governor's office, their legislative person told me that the House never sent over their bill, so he hasn't signed it.
Okay.
So I was curious if you know anything about it.
Yeah, I don't recall specifically. I got a list of bills that was presented to the governor last week. That's the last time I got an update. And I can't recall if that bill was in that list, but I haven't got any other updates. So they will eventually send it up to the governor if it has not yet been sent up.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Doyle, this is Kathleen Worth from Pinellas County. My question is, we lost a DBS office in Pinellas, and the people in Pinellas would like their facility back. Is there any chance that that's going to happen?
I can tell you that there are no current plans at DBS at this point to open any new offices. However, I will say that as we look at how we're working as a state and how we look at, I talk about WIOA again, there may be some opportunities for us to maybe do some co-location, maybe to have some mini satellite offices, maybe have a person, and maybe sometimes it might even just be one person in an office that a person can interact with directly to take questions or to provide services in that office. So I think that there will be some opportunities as we look at the broader system and where, you know, where, for example, DBS may not have an office somewhere, but maybe one of our other workforce partners may have an office there, and if we can get some space there. Or in some instances, I know in one of our districts, we don't have a satellite office. The satellite office was closed down, but we have someone who from our office that goes into the local lighthouse and is there for a period of time or by appointment to meet with clients that need services that way. You're welcome.
Whoa, that one.
It's the mics, y'all. It's not me.
Star Wars.
No, this one, you just have to turn one of them off. One of them needs to be off. I don't care which one it is. So turn that one off and I'll use this one. Yeah.
That's all it is. You just have to turn it off.
Here you go, babe. No, it's off right now.
Thank you. Hi, this is Will Grignan, Southwest Florida Council. I have two questions. Where can we access the contract between our local provider and DBS? And number two, what recourse do consumers have when they find they're not getting adequate services from a local provider, and then they find themselves being punished and humiliated by that provider when they demand adequate services?
All right, so if you lack a copy of the contract, we can get you a copy of the contract, an accessible version. We can certainly do that. So I'll need your contact information, and we can get that, or if you want to email me, and we can get you an accessible copy of that contract. The second thing is that we did put in the contracts a requirement this year that that the providers have to have a mechanism in place to resolve client concerns. And so that was one of the things that we added to the contract, somewhere between the cycle with the ones that we put out last September and the ones that we're working on now, that they had to have a process in place. And so if you're not getting any resolution through that process, then that should be kicked up to the state office. We do have a client resolution specialist, Walter Blackman, and he can work with you. If there are issues of retaliation and all that kind of stuff, I'd tell folks that's not acceptable from our staff. It's not acceptable from the providers either. And so if there are those kind of issues, then we will deal with those as a contractual matter. And, you know, just in your worst case scenarios, you know, your best case scenarios, you sit down, you talk about it. I found that many of the providers, if we have to contact them, are very receptive to making changes and making adjustments. I have found that. And, you know, once an issue is raised, I found that many of them are very receptive to making changes. But if we're not able to resolve issues and conflicts, the contract does allow us to issue remedies or penalties and other things for not meeting service needs. And so, as I mentioned, the contract language that we changed over the last cycle is that services must be provided in a manner, a pace, a schedule that best meets the client's needs. And so so that means, again, for some folks that's a quicker pace, some that's a slower pace. Some folks that might mean a different set of services. Some of them may mean services on location with the provider. Others, it may mean services at the client's home. And so we need to make sure that's happening at the way and the level that it needs to happen. And if we need to get involved, we will. We've also instituted that the providers have to institute a client satisfaction survey. Now, again, it's them. They're doing their own satisfaction surveys. But if their satisfaction levels from clients decrease to a certain level, then they have to implement a plan. They have to develop a plan and implement a plan to get that customer satisfaction level back up. And so those are things that we designed to create more accountability, more consumer a focus in terms of service delivery. But if there's some specific things that you're dealing with and you're not getting it resolved, we'd like to know about it so that we can work with you and work with that provider. Absolutely. My email is robert.doyle, and my last name is D-O-Y-L-E, at dbs.fldoe.org. I can do that again. It's robert.doyle at dbs.fldoe.org. Thank you.
Mr. Doyle, I was just wondering about, along the same lines, what about staff of the local providers or the lighthouses that have experienced difficulties with their supervisors or the local providers that are hiring people that really aren't qualified to do the jobs which they are supposed to be hired to do? Are you all checking into that or doing investigations when that's reported to you? Or what does a person have to do if they are a staff member and have been abused or mistreated in some way by their supervisors?
So you have lighthouse staff being abused by their supervisor?
Correct.
Right. So some of that is not directly addressed in the contract because the relationship between – it's a relationship between the employer and the employee. Now, that staff person is also a consumer that provides opportunities for some interventions on that level. In terms of folks who are not being, I'm trying to remember the second part of that question, hiring staff that are not qualified. We did just in this set of contracts that we're working on with Older Blind, the adult program, the Blind Babies program, did go through and clarify staff credentialing and requirements for staff credentialing. And so since we are going out to the providers and doing more monitoring, there have been a period of time where our folks weren't getting out as well from the state office and monitoring the providers. So now that we've scheduled to go to 10 of the providers this year, that's 10 of the 20. The others were doing desk site reviews, just reading documents and monitoring that way. But as we go out, we'll be able to look at some of those things in a little more detail to make sure that the correct credentials, staff have the correct credentials to provide the services. And that's actually part of the monitoring tool that we use to ensure that staff have credentials. We had a question up here.
I had a question about the budget.
The budget, yes.
Okay. In regards to
my question was in regards to the budget cuts per se. Have there been budget cuts affecting DBS in terms of providing tools both in technology and in practical aids to their clients? I, for one, have been told no more often than I've been told yes as I have progressed through the Rehab Center program in getting the tools that I was trained to use that will make a significant impact in my future employment. It was a difficult process, but I did reach some satisfaction. But it was almost at the breaking point. You know, I had worked so hard for months in school, and there were several points where I qualified to earn things. And I'm using that term loosely in terms of being trained to use something and being told, no, you can't have it. There's no money for that. There's no budget. It's very discouraging as a student to want to continue, much less proceed in a life after school in productive employment. So what do budget cuts look like in terms of tool provision and life beyond DBS?
So, a couple things. It sounds like you may be in the VR program, and I can tell. Okay, just came out. So I can tell you that our resources are bigger in the VR program right now than where they're not bigger than what we had before, but they're bigger in terms of what we have compared to what we have in, say, the Blind Babies program or what we have in the adult program or the OB program. We have those federal dollars and the state matching dollars we're able to do more with, and we're able to buy more. And some of that is in terms of equipment. So while there is no quote-unquote shortage for the VR program and those fundings. There are requirements that we want our staff to do to make sure we're stretching the resources and that we're providing the resources where the when and where the resources need to be provided, not knowing the full details or specifics. So, for example, if we have a client that's completed training and that client wants a computer for their home and that computer is not directly tied to an employment or employment outcome, but it's to use a computer at home, have a computer at home, that's not very likely to happen. But if they need a computer and it's imminent for a job that they're moving into, that's where that kind of kicks in and that process moves a lot faster. It's got to be directly tied to the educational pursuit or the employment pursuit when we're purchasing an equipment. And there's even within the policies, you know, let's say, for example, we purchase a piece of equipment for a job. A client needs a piece of equipment, let's say a Braille note or something like that for a job, and then that job ends after 6 months and they're not working. There's provisions in the policies that that equipment's supposed to come back to DBS until that time. And I'm not sure if I'm getting to all the details of your answer.
Procurement and securing this equipment is still moving forward.
It is.
And because I know things like that aren't cheap, and I totally get it. It's not for personal use and for you to have fun at home. It's just knowing it's available without giving a pint of blood.
Right. We really want to, again, I'm customer focused. I really am customer focused and client focused and want to make sure we provide those things that need to be provided. And we've said to the districts, okay, yeah, you have to watch and manage your resources. You got to do that. But there's some things that sometimes that have been denied that you know, were very reasonable. They were very reasonable. There have been areas where we look at and say, you know, a client may want, you know, I don't know if people still use the Cadillac term. You know, I'm back in the old school. Cadillac was a standard, you know, and maybe Buick was maybe a lesser standard. I don't know. You know, I've seen some commercials with Buick lately that, you know. But there's some clients wanted devices that may have 57 features, but they really only need a device that requires, you know, 27 features. And so, you know, we say in those areas, you got to look at and see what does the client need for their employment. There may be places where somebody wants to go to school. And what they want to do for school is not directly, or what they say they want to do for school is not directly tied to their vocational goal. And so we may say, well, what you want to do, we're going to pay for this. But if you want that extra, then you got to pay for that extra because it's not directly tied to the goal. So we ask them to look at and plan within what the IPE is calling for and those extra things that are outside of those areas may not necessarily be funded. Yeah, it was. Okay, I know. That was a long explanation. I'm sorry. I see another hand right next to you. Yeah. Yes, ma'am.
Good afternoon. I have a question. Oh. How can an international student who is going to college in Florida become a DBS client?
Okay. So actually, you don't have to be a resident of Florida. We actually have a somebody reached out to me from one of the other directors in another state. He met a student that was going to be coming to Florida, working, doing a 6-month internship at Disney. And wanted to know if we would provide support to that client. And we absolutely can. Now you say international, and I think that might be the question of what we need to look at, whether that person is looking at, you know, whether they're here in the United States, if there's intentions to stay in the United States. We have to look at all that detail. But if they're coming from another state, certainly we can provide services. And when that person gets their job, we both our state agency and the state agency from the other state can claim that as a employment outcome. We would need to coordinate services. We really need to look at the details of the citizenship status and because there are some fine lines in there. And there are some cases where a person is not a citizen that we can provide services. We've got to look at the details, though.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And I'm not sure how.
It's an Ewok.
It's an Ewok, yeah.
I had to think for a minute.
Okay, here you go.
Okay, hi, Mr. Doyle. I'm Sherry Bunn.
Hi, Sherry.
First, thank you for continuing to support Newsline in Florida. That makes me very happy, and I'm sure some other people too. But I do have a question. There are about four of us who work in the Orlando area, and we have like a volunteer program set up where we The Lighthouse of Central Florida stores CCTVs and low vision items, and we distribute them. There's a waiting list, and we distribute them to people who can use them who do not get services from DBS. And I've talked to several, especially older people, who have said, I don't understand why I can't get a CCTV from DBS, because my brother in Maryland got one, and he got a scale, and he got this and that and the other that he needs in his daily life activities. Explain to me the difference as to why some states seem to give their seniors and older people more devices, and the guy wasn't employed or anything, and why Florida seems different.
Yeah, that is a budget thing, and like, for example, in the adult program, or independent living is what we used to call it, but in the adult program, we still kind of call it that, as well as the older blind program, there are just not as many resources there, and the majority of the dollars in those programs go to training. And so we have in the contracts $100 that the providers can give in terms of devices, but there's not always enough general revenue dollars, and that's where those programs are primarily funded from, general revenue funds, to be able to buy all the CCTVs that we would like. That we would like to purchase, and that's really where the resource. When I talked about the VR program, you know, from the federal standpoint, for, you know, there's a 78-point-some percent of those dollars come from the feds, and we only have to match 21.3%. And so, because we get so much from the feds, we're able to stretch out the resources and do so much more. But in terms of state dollars, there's just not enough, and we do supplement. I can tell you the adult program and the independent living programs by over $1 million from what we get on the federal side. And so we do put in more general revenue dollars, but we don't have enough to buy all the equipment. I'm not sure how Maryland does their model. Maybe I don't know whether they have such a high emphasis on the training side and what they pay for training. I really have to go back and look at that model. You know, I have been really an advocate for and been looking at, you know, AT exchanges. And I know that FAST, the Florida Association of Assistive Technology, I'm not sure if that's what all the initials stand for. They do have an AT exchange, and we do try to get equipment when we know about it that have extended the 3 years or so, donate it once we've done the proper surplusing, donate it to a not-for-profit, and they can get it into the hands of consumers. But like you said, the Lighthouse of Central Florida program and the AT exchange program are the best ways right now for that equipment to be distributed. And unless we get more money, there really won't be a way, or unless we change the model. One last thing I'm going to say, and I know we have a couple other hands, and I don't want to talk too long. You know, if we look at the state of Florida and we look at how many folks that are counted to have visual impairment, and we compare that to the number of people that we currently serve, there's a whole lot more people that could benefit from our services than we serve. And it will take an infusion of resources, whether it's for CCTVs or just simply providing services to more people that into the system in order for us to reach and do more. And so as we look at our budgets and our budget requests over the next few years, I'm told that next year is going to be tight, you know, over the next few years, and where we have the opportunity to request more dollars, we will ask for more dollars. That's when we have the opportunity to do that, to do so. But again, I think that goes from consumer standpoint of advocacy and saying, hey, this is what we need, and then for us to try to put that in our budgets. Obviously, everything we try to put in a budget request, we've got to have data to back it up. You know, I can't just go and say, give me $5 million. You know, I've got to say, well, these are the data, and these are the trends, and these are the consumer requests, and this is the number of times that we haven't been able to meet those consumer requests before I can put it in the budget.
And we don't have state income tax either.
And there's no state income tax, right. Yes, sir.
Good afternoon, Mr. Doyle, and thank you for a very well-presented seminar. My name is Derek Selbo, and I'm toying with starting a business. And I know that DBS, through the VR program, is very good at helping people trying to find jobs. Are there any differentiations between somebody looking for a job and somebody looking to start their own business? in terms of the degree of help you might give them in terms of something like equipment such as a CCTV or even just any type of assistance?
So folks who are looking for businesses, there will generally be a greater expenditure by the division. And we have a policy that talks about what we look for in that regard. And so someone who's starting a business that might need a CCTV or a computer or, you know, even equipment to get that business started, there are opportunities to have that, those things funded by the division. From a business perspective, though, we do expect that the client is going to be bringing some other resources to the business. And so whether that's through loans or whether that's through their own finances or whether that's through grants or other things, we're looking at the client is going to be bringing some additional business resources to be a part of what we're funding with in terms of the division. But we've put some substantial dollars into self-employment opportunities, and so there's generally more that's provided. We do try to work with organizations that will help those individuals develop business plans and make sure that it's a feasible business, and in terms of determining is it can this go somewhere to make sure that it will be sustainable.
All right, Mr. Doug.
Thank you. Once again, Mr. Doyle, we'd like to thank you for you and DBS for moving to replace those critical administrative positions at our library. We all depend on our library services. Over the last several months, there really has been, even though Jim Woolihan has tried, there has been a lack of direction for a lot of the staff. So I really appreciate you moving to make our library as good as it could be and was.
Thank you. Thank you. I can just say from the library standpoint, you know, Jim was in an acting and he was doing two jobs, and so he probably was trying to tread lightly. But now that he is the new bureau chief, he's going to be able to try to move forward with more speed, and then again, getting the librarian on board will help us as well. And that lady is a go-getter. She is a go-getter, Rebecca Ayers.
My name is Elizabeth Bowden.
Hi,
and
Elizabeth.
I am very concerned about how the assistive technology services are provided to clients, especially in the evaluation area. I know that the Tampa Lighthouse people are very qualified to do the things that they do, but some of their outsourced people that they get in other areas of the state happen to be vendors, and a lot of times they, number one, recommend their own products they sell, and number two, have not had the background and the experience to really recommend the proper products for the consumers that they evaluate because they don't spend enough time with them. And I understand that in a lot of cases, especially in the case of the place in Tallahassee, there's no one qualified there to do the evaluations that should be done. Is there anything, any provision that DBS is going to make for the long run to solve this problem by, like, maybe having the AT program done under DBS so that they can get more qualified people to provide the services and training that the clients need?
I can tell you that there are no plans to move the program within the division. We just did a 3-year contract with Tampa Lighthouse for those services. This was as a result of the public procurement through the IT, what they call the ITN process. There is an additional 3-year extended. Now, there is still requirements that services are provided by qualified staff. That's in that contract. And services are provided in a timely manner. That's in that contract. And the customer service needs are identified in that contract. And if the provider, Tampa Lighthouse or whoever, in this particular case, Tampa Lighthouse, if they're not able to meet those needs, then we can go outside of that contract to procure services in a different manner. And so we do have those options. I know that Tampa has been very, we work with them throughout the contracting process. They're very keen aware of what we're looking for in the contract. And I know they want to meet the needs because this is what they're contracted to do. But there, if there are issues and there are challenges, I would say, again, I encourage you to work with Tampa directly and talk to them. But if you don't get that resolution, call the state office, talk to Walter Blackman, or give me a call, and we'll connect you to folks and make sure that those things are that the linkages are happening as they need to be. I have found, I will say again, that when we've talked to and had issues and we've talked to the providers, they have been very receptive to making adjustments. I don't know how I'm doing on time.
or if you're inclined to give us more time, but I know.
You have another 20 minutes.
All right.
Mr. Doyle, good afternoon. You mentioned very quickly that the children's program has been significantly downsized due to, you know, monetary constraints and everything. To the K-12 program, if somebody requires CCTVs or AT products, and DBS cannot, financially give that to, you know, to that student, for example, something to look at a board or whatever have you not, what other agencies are out there that could, that could provide that service?
Right. So two things. If you've got a student, you're talking K-12, the primary responsibility in that classroom, in that school setting for providing assistive technology devices is the school. That under the Individual Disabilities Education Act and under the 504 program, the school has a primary responsibility. We will work with that school in order to make sure that those things happen. And if there's some reason that it's not happening, then DBS can, as the resources are there, try to step in and provide those resources and provide those funding. But the monies that are available through IDEA are much more than are available through DBS for those devices and services. Other questions? They all ended at one time. Mr. Edwards, yes.
I knew he wasn't in the
I was thinking he wasn't in here.
So one of the questions that I think some of us have wondered about is whether you have any long-range plans for making changes at the rehabilitation center, maybe creating some special programs there. Do you have any vision of where the rehabilitation center might be headed?
Right. Yeah. The rehab center again is that special place, and Dr. Williams has been leading a team over there, and I don't have the details in front of me, but been working with a team. They've done some strategic planning there. We've been looking at strengthening the vocational aspect of the program. Doesn't mean that we still need to keep the independent living and the technology training and those other areas as well, but strengthening the employment aspect of what's happening there. We are bringing in Dr. Karen Wolf, who is just nationally renowned and internationally at this stage, to help us develop some programs there at the center. We are also looking at next year, trying to bring in another transition program where students may be able to come and be on campus for a couple of weeks next year. We've hired, as I mentioned, Tracy Bradley to help strengthen the programs, a very strong administrator. So we do have a lot of goals for it. The idea is that we will be producing through that center people who will go out in employment and people who will go out and have stronger skills for independence. That's really the vision. So we've been trying to put the people in place, and we've been working on contracts, as I mentioned, with Dr. Wolf and some other ways to do that. We've looked at other programs in terms of, you know, whether we can do a call center training there. We've looked at, and I know that Stacy Smith, who's on the campus there, has looked at some other programs. And so I think there's a lot of things that are available to what we can do. It has not all come together as one finalized plan yet, because we're just getting the people in place to do so. But I can tell you that the expectation is there. The expectation is there. Dr. Williams actually goes and spends, she's there generally about once a month, where she's spending some time both at the rehab center and at the library, because we have a strong interest in seeing both of those, as well as the district office, as well as the CRPs that are there, be successful.
Mr. Doyle.
Yes, sir.
I am currently working on a book project, which is going to be a while in the making, regarding my experiences at summer camp for blind children. And I wondered if you could tell me in briefly what your plans, what you're working on next year with this grant and so on.
So a couple of things is we are looking to develop a summer camp. We've talked about a couple of things. We've talked about developing a summer camp. There's several members of the various groups within the department, within the FRCB and the DSO and our staff are looking at developing the protocol of what that would look like and putting some resources both from the division's aspect but also bringing other resources from the community. We also want to be in a position where we can fund other camps that that can take place. And, you know, the emphasis has been in terms of some of the early discussion, again, the groups of age 6 to 13. Obviously, you got to look at, you know, how many you bring in and where you break that out. But again, the idea is to enhance and strengthen independent living and also to have a focus on thinking about vocational goals after one would leave school or high school or exit high school. So those have been the general areas of discussion. Some have been talking about bringing kids and their parents to a week-long or several days in a week-long camp and giving them those skills. You know, obviously you have to deal with transportation and those other aspects, but there's a couple of working groups that are working on that. And I will say that, you know, as we talk about from the division standpoint, there's that work group that is working on and working on that. But as we reopen the grants and application program for folks to apply, the not-for-profit agencies to apply, I'm certainly hopeful that there'll be some applications in there, too, to support some camp activities.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All right. I think that I've probably taken up a lot more time than what was planned. Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity. Two more steps here. Thank you, sir. Just a couple more steps. Thank you.
Good working situation with Bill Finley. He was super good. Did a really good job.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. I'll tell him you said that, too, because he needs it right about now.
We had a problem in Miami, and he was really good.
I will tell him that.
Thank you.
All
right. Does anybody want to do a door prize?
You can.
No, you need a mic. Let us bring you a mic. Okay, hold on, guys. Let's do this drawing for the door prize, and then we'll break. On the first number, very good. All right, we're in recess.
All right, well, that's quick. You got it.
Thank you very much.
And that will complete the streaming for this session. Just join us back at 7 o'clock tonight for the FCB annual banquet and also 8:30 tomorrow morning for the annual business meeting.